REC's translator reform petition is finally on the FCC's radar. It's LPFM versus translator as the Media Bureau settles two cases, including the long-running spat in Fort Myers. FCC makes things easier for TV stations in the transition to ATSC3. All of this and more coming up right now.
REC, FCC Today, PG Bradley.
This is FCC Today, the podcast for Tuesday, June 27, 2023. On Monday, the FCC has placed on public notice RM11952, a petition for rulemaking which was filed by REC Networks last August. The petition, known as Translator Reform, acknowledges that sometime following the upcoming LPFM filing window, the next filing window for secondary services would likely be for new FM translator stations. The petition recognizes the various activities that took place following the 2003 auction 83 FM translator filing window, which was dubbed the Great Translator Invasion. In that window, over 13,000 applications for new translators were filed, with about one-third of the applications being filed by two organizations commonly operated by the same individual. In response to the massive filings, the FCC would eventually put a freeze on the grants of new construction permit applications in the window and would eventually impose a cap of 10 applications per organization that could be granted. In January 2011, President Barack Obama signed into law the Local Community Radio Act. While many associate the law with dealing strictly with LPFM stations, it also addresses FM translators. In Section 5, the LCRA calls for licenses for both LPFM and translators to be available and to distribute those licenses based on community need. As a result of the new law, the FCC imposed a cap of up to 70 ungranted window applications and imposed a per-market cap. They also established a method that would protect future LPFM opportunities in the core areas of the top 150 markets that were considered to have limited spectrum. This paved the way for the previous LPFM filing window in 2013. REC's proposed changes would make permanent for future translator filing windows many of the policies that were put into place after the LCRA. This includes a national cap on translator applications, but no per-market caps. The previous channel floors concept that was used to protect LPFM opportunities is replaced with a disparity factor to be used to identify spectrum-limited markets. Under the disparity factor concept, core market areas which have a larger footprint of FM translators versus existing and potential LPFM stations would be considered spectrum-limited and would require the protection of certain locations on specific channels within the core area. REC also called on the FCC to hold a filing window for new FM translators in the 88.1 to 91.9 reserve band, the first ever such filing window since the FCC developed the point system for mutually exclusive non-commercial educational applications. The current rules allow a reserve band FM translator application to have priority if they are proposing a fill-in service. This rule was written at a time when the only purpose of fill-in translators was to address coverage issues in areas within the primary station's service contour, but was blocked by terrain. It does not reflect the modern uses of fill-in translators, such as AM and HD radio simulcast. REC's proposal would only extend fill-in priority to translators intending to provide services in areas where there is only one or two educational services existing, including the primary station for the translator. REC also asked for revisions to the NCE translator point system to reflect the fact that in the next filing window, there would be the first real opportunity for LPFM stations to file for new translators. REC also proposed some minor changes to the LPFM rules to eliminate redundant language, provide minor flexibilities, and to change the translator ownership rules to be more in line with its full-service counterparts. REC did not propose to increase the number of translators an LPFM station can own, nor did REC propose to allow non-fill-in LPFM translators to be fed through alternative means. Comments on RM11952 are being accepted through July 26, 2023. Just a reminder, if you're listening to this on the Michelle Bradley YouTube channel, please remember to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and hit the notification dinger to be reminded of future content. Thanks again for your support. John Egerton from Broadcasting and Cable is reporting on an order released by the FCC that would help expand the versatility of ATSC3 next-gen television broadcast stations and to help in the transition from the current ATSC1 digital system to ATSC3. TV broadcast stations operating in ATSC3 are required to continue providing their ATSC1 programming. Because of the nature of ATSC3, the ATSC1 version of the programming must be done on a different TV station still operating the current ATSC1 digital system. In 2017, the FCC said that it would allow stations broadcasting in ATSC3 to contract with another station to deliver its ATSC1 simulcast of the TV station's main programming stream. Multicast streams were allowed under special temporary authority. The recent FCC decision would allow for TV stations to expand their license to include the multicast streams without the use of an STA. While there is no STA, these rules will only remain in place until a day that the FCC eliminates the local simulcasting requirement. The FCC also ruled that these temporary simulcasts will not trigger any ownership or attribution issues for the station hosting the channel, and also that a non-commercial TV facility can host simulcasts from a commercial broadcaster without affecting its NCE status. The FCC also pushed out the sunset date for simulcasting from July 17, 2023 to July 17, 2027. Ah, yes, dingers. All right, we're on our way with a couple of LPFM-related dingers here. First of all, the FCC has settled a long-running dispute between an LPFM and a translator in Fort Myers, Florida. Over the past few years, Sumerasi Incorporated, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, a licensee of WSGDLP, and that's in Lehigh Acres, Florida. They've been complaining about interference from an FM translator, W239 Charlie Lima, Golden Gate, Florida, licensed to Fort Myers Broadcasting Company. In a series of filings dating back to 2019, each side had filed multiple pleadings accusing the other side of running too much power. And in one pleading by Sumerasi, they claim that Fort Myers is using their power to take over their LPFM station. Fort Myers accuses Sumerasi of running too much power and also commercial advertising. October 6, 2020, Sumerasi filed a petition for reconsideration on a license to cover filed by Fort Myers on W239CL. The pleading did include an interference package. And, last Friday, the FCC has finally released their decision on this spat. During the investigation, it was determined that Sumerasi was operating with a two-bay antenna while their current license only specified a one-bay. Because Sumerasi was operating with an unauthorized facility, the interference package that they filed against Fort Myers was invalidated, and their petition for reconsideration was dismissed. That's one of the requirements if you file a translator interference package is you've got to make sure that you've got your ducks in a row and that you're running everything legal. In a separate but related action, the Media Bureau has issued a notice of apparent liability for $2,500 against Sumerasi for operating with an unauthorized antenna in violation of Section 301 of the Communications Act and Section 73.845 of the rules. Sumarasi has 30 days to respond to the NAL. Now, we have a different case, which is kind of around the same thing, but things worked out a little differently. In this case of LPFM versus Translator involving an unauthorized antenna, the $7,500 dinger went to the translator. WIN Radio Broadcasting Corporation, licensee of W232 Delta Echo, Potomac, Maryland. Now, in this case, it was found that the translator was operating with an unauthorized antenna. The translator, which was moved in from New Tripoli, Pennsylvania, during the big 250-mile move opportunity with AM Revitalization, they had originally proposed to use a Shively 6810 directional antenna. In 2017, Tacoma Radio, the licensee of WOWD in Tacoma Park, Maryland, filed a complaint under the old interference rules stating that the translator was causing interference to the LPFM. Tacoma would follow up with a filing that included a photograph to show that the translator was running with the wrong antenna. In response, WIN had stated that instead of the Shively, they used a JamPro JLLP2 antenna, which they claimed was a comparable antenna. The decision to use the JamPro instead of the Shively was due to concerns that the Shively was too heavy for the tower. So it was a safety issue. The translator is currently in the process of changing channels right now to 101.5. And once that happens, it'll no longer be an issue for WOWD. Actually, the FCC approached WOWD and said, do you want to file another interference complaint using the new process? And they said, well, we filed one under the old one. Why do we need to file one under the new one? Anyway, the FCC also dismissed an argument made by Tacoma. This is a good one. That the station's license should have expired pursuant to Section 312G of the Communications Act. That's the law that says if you're silent for more than a year, that you can get your license canceled. The FCC has also in the past, they've also interpreted that to say that if you're engaged in some kind of an unauthorized operation, that could also count towards towards a 312, because basically an unauthorized operation is basically just as good as being silent in the eyes of the FCC. However, while the Media Bureau normally does apply the 312G to broadcasting from an unauthorized location, they concluded that because the translator had an unauthorized antenna, they were still at the correct location and on the correct channel. So therefore, they're not subject to any 312G scrutiny. Now, notice the difference in these two cases. In the Fort Myers case, there was a 301 violation, which is unauthorized operation. We did not see a 301 violation in this case. So there's a little bit of difference. I'm scratching a little bit on the difference, because in both cases, they were operating with unauthorized antennas, which in the Fort Myers case, probably resulted in the station operating with more effective radiated power. In the Maryland case, the translator actually admitted that they were operating with a higher than what they should have been running transmitter power output because they miscalculated the feed line loss. So, you know, there's a little inconsistency there in the enforcement. And I mean, either way, the translator, which didn't have the 301 piece attached to it, it was just rules, they got the bigger fine than the LPFM. So if anything, the LPFM was cut a break, you know. And normally, a lot of times, LPFM and translator fines are usually about the same. I mean, this is, you know, we see this a lot with renewals, that they will just run they'll have the same $1,500 fine. And, you know, it's normally $3,000 for a full service station if you're late on a renewal filing. Totally different issue and totally in a different part of the world, literally. The Enforcement Bureau's Investigations and Hearing Division has reached a consent decree with Docomo Pacific and their parent, Docomo Guam Holdings Incorporated are wholly owned by Nippon Telegraph and Telephone, NTT, a Japanese corporation. In 2015, the FCC authorized Docomo Pacific to have 100% foreign ownership, consisting of 65.15% of the equity and voting interests. And the Japanese Ministry of Finance, yes, the Japanese government, holding a minority percentage at 26.95% equity and 41.53% of the vote. How does that add up? Wait, hold it. That is over 100%. What? Okay, that's how it was written. Maybe I just don't understand finance, okay? I'm not a financial guru. I'm the Michi, okay? I understand radio stuff. I understand some, you know, I understand FCC stuff and, you know, but where it comes to the stock market and stuff like that, all I know is right now, do not, you know, Odyssey and Salem, no. All right, in September 2020, NTT commenced a tender offer for outstanding Docomo shares. And in November, NTT acquired those shares, which increased its indirect ownership interest to 91.46%. By the end of December, all shares of stock were acquired by NTT from minority shareholders. In January 2021, it looks like the light bulb rang on the top of their head and they realized, oh my God, we screwed up. They filed a petition for declaratory ruling after the changes happened. And that was eventually granted by the then International Bureau, what is it now, the Office of International Affairs, in December of 2021. So in this case, Docomo Pacific and the FCC reached a consent decree where they would be subject to a compliance plan and will have to make a $50,000 civil penalty payment.
FCC Today.
FCC Today, the podcast, has been a production of REC Networks. Always on at recnet.com. If you're watching on YouTube, please like the video, subscribe to the channel, and hit that notification dinger to be informed of new episodes. Keep up to the minute with events around the Media Bureau at fcc.today. If you need assistance with an FM broadcast facility, existing LPFM, full service or translator, call 202-621-2355 for new LPFM applications. There's the Windows coming. Visit lpfm.app. Pre-qualify and fill out the show of interest form. I'm Michelle Bradley, KU3N SPE certified broadcast technologist. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Thursday.
REC.